This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Their homes and losing their lives is something we ought to take note of, and that's pretty much where we came out on this issue.
Well, part of the answer to climate change and global warming seems to be a different type of transportation network than what we have nowadays, and that goes specifically to what transit workers do. So maybe you could talk some about that.
Well, there's no question about it. You know, if we would invest more in mass transit and less in drilling oil, we would have a much cleaner environment. But also, you know what, there'd be a lot of American kids walking around on both legs who are not right now because they've been sent across the world to engage in wars with people simply to extract more oil from the ground. And, you know, when you think about all the negative impacts on our society and on our country of, you know, our thirst for oil from every corner of the planet, this becomes a pretty easy thing to oppose.
What's the path between where we are today and where we need to be as far as transportation is concerned? What are the steps we should be taking to start getting there?
Well, the United States should be investing in mass transit, you know, along the same lines as we invested in highways after World War II. Our urban centers are growing in population. They're projected to grow extremely over the course of the next 20 years. More and more people are going to be living in areas in which you cannot get around or even access those cities by car. So it is something of a national crisis. Simply, you know, the idea that we have to build out more than we have. But you should know also that over the course of the last 4 years, with the active consent of Congress and the administration, transit has been losing all over the country. We've been gaining ridership, but we've been losing dollars, and the federal government has refused to step up and keep transit running at a time when the local economies have been in tatters. So, for example, right now in Seattle, there's a big public debate over whether or not there will be funding to continue the existing levels of service. Forget about building out for the future. We have seen service cuts across the United States in the last 4 years that are deeper than at any time since the Great Depression. At the same time, transit riders are the only people that have not been held harmless from tax increases. All across the country, we have seen taxes increased at record levels. At the same time, service has been cut. There have been more layoffs in the transit sector than at any time since World War II. All of these things are going on while the environment gets worse, tornadoes increase, hurricanes get worse, the oceans get warmer, and the American people suffer with flooding throughout the country. So this is really a sick policy in the United States, and the kind of building out that ought to be done. First, we ought to preserve the system as it exists. We ought to roll back transit fares to make it more accessible to people who are doing poorly in this economy. And then we ought to have a serious national plan for the next 20 years to build out transit all over the country.
Certainly here locally in Portland, we've had both service cuts and fare hikes, so we can relate to what you're talking about along those lines. And at the same time that the subsidies to transit are not occurring, we have huge subsidies to the oil and gas industry. So perhaps one issue is to try and redirect some of that money in a more constructive way for the future.
Well, our view on that is pretty simple. The problem in Washington is that the oil companies are down here writing checks every day, and the average American transit user is not. That's not to say they should be writing checks, but the users of transit really need to have a collective voice that must be heard in the halls of Congress. So what our union has been doing for the last 2 years, 2.5 years, is organizing riders everywhere we can. We have 91 cities in America right now that have some form of transit rider group, and that is where we think the real power to change this is in organizing riders to scream and holler at Congress until we get fair treatment for transit.
And a broader coalition as well, right? Because, for example, with this Keystone XL fight, they're not only environmental groups, they're labor groups, they're indigenous groups. There are a variety of organizations that don't always talk to each other lining up on the same side of the fight.
That's right, and we need to continue to grow those alliances. But at the same time, there are more than 10 million people who set foot on a train or a bus someplace in the United States every single day, and their voice needs to be heard. You know, that's almost three times the size of the NRA, And if the NRA can exercise as much power as it does with 4 million members, can you imagine what transit riders could do if they ever got together around the country and organized?
Times used to be different back when we didn't have the interstate network, when we had people living in apartment buildings. We had a much more close contact society. People couldn't avoid talking to each other. Now we have folks living in attached housing, driving in a car by himself. That makes it tougher to organize. What sort of approaches do we need nowadays to be able to reach out to people and put them back together in a movement?
Well, you know, I can tell you in terms of transit riders, over the course of the month of October in 2012, our members got out into bus stops and in train stops across the country and distributed more than 1 million pieces of literature, simply urging transit riders to vote and to vote for people that cared about transit. And in 56 separate locations in the month of October, we had transit rider days where elected officials and candidates came out and rode the bus. Just this last Saturday in Lincoln, Nebraska, 5 out of 6 city council candidates rode the bus, I guess partially to see what it was like, but also to campaign with riders of transit. We as riders and workers have to get the elected officials out there to understand what it's like to get to work by transit and actually all the benefits that transit riders give to our society.
For people in the U.S. who are labor movement activists but who want to fight global warming but at the same time continue to fight for economic justice, what type of advice would you give them? For those of us who are not necessarily in transit, for example, but do share both passions, how do we start making that happen?
Well, contact Americans for Transit, which is a nonprofit group. They have a website, and we work closely with them to help organize riders throughout the country. As I said, there are 91 cities right now that have some form of transit rider group. But certainly by going online and contacting Americans for Transit, you can find out the many ways in which people who simply like transit and think it's good for the environment can pitch in and help.
So Google Americans for Transit or whatever search engine you have. I shouldn't give a promo for any one of them here. But so look up Americans for Transit, find their website, and see what you can learn there, correct?
That's right.
Okay, anything as far as a Earth Day message for our listeners, anything in particular you'd like to tell labor folks who are thinking about Earth Day today?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you really care about the Earth and the environment, and I think we all should, after all, it's where we live and breathe, get out and ride transit, you know, and not only ride it, but, you know, think through your commute, how you get to work, how you get around town, and try transit. See if it's as rough as people think it is. You know, I'm often told that Americans are in love with their car, and I don't think that's true. I just think they hate the alternative often, and sometimes it's because they haven't tried it in a while. So my message for Earth Day would be everybody should get out there and take a trip on a bus.
Thank you very much, Larry Hanley, president of the Amalgamated Transit Union. Thanks for joining us on Earth Day.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I have a couple of announcements here to make. One of them is that KBOO is now sponsoring a movie series, and one of those will be about teachers. Regarding teachers and defending public education. The title is The Inconvenient Truth About Waiting for Superman. That's going to be on Thursday, May 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, which is at 26th in Southeast Clinton. And there's going to be discussion afterwards, which will be led by Portland's social equality educators. So if you want to hear about The Inconvenient Truth About Waiting for Superman, that again is Thursday, May 9th, Clinton Street Theater, and discussion follows, part of the KBOO movie series. Also, we're coming up on Workers' Memorial Day, so it's the time every year when we think about people who lose their lives at work. Many of them just did. As you may know, a big explosion occurred in Texas just recently where a number of people were killed. But specifically in Oregon, there were too many people. One is too many, but too many people who died on the job in 2012, and there'll be an observance in Salem. There's a monument for workers who died on the job. Observance coming up next week. There's one tonight at Northwest Oregon Labor Council's regular meeting. So I'm going to take just a moment and read their names. There's a very small way of honoring people, but it's something that is, I think, the least we can do. So these people died in Oregon on the job in 2012. Juan Alvarez Lopez, Eugene Bernard, Jason Bjarnson, Gertrude Bradley, Amy Jane Brandhagen, Stephen Christensen, Thor Coulter, Robert Deneau, James Dorset, Michael Earlywine, Stephen Forsyth, Patrick Franson, Daniel Garcia, Terry Garner, Robert Gibson, Norma Goddick, Robert Green, Chester Guthrie, Johnny Hanna, Thomas Heap, Glenn Hibbert, Dave Huddle, Luke Jensen, Chris Langle, Shane Machado, James Maddie, Harold Malcolm, Stanley McCall, Clarence Miller, Brian Nelson, David Nichols, Todd Norrish, Daniel Nunn, Keone Piper, Gregory Priest, Michael Ray, Robert Reinke, John Roberts, John Ristom, John Summers, John Vanderbeek, Efren Vargas, George Warmington, Jennifer Warren, Joshua Weibel, Richard Wigney, Charles Wiley, and also we had people from Oregon die in military service this year, too. Those are James D. Nail, Mabry J. Anders, Andrew J. Keller, Keaton G. Coffey, and Justin Wilkins. All these people died on the job, went to work, didn't come home. We hope everyone will remember to stay safe and to come home to their family, work to live, and not risk your life in the process. There's a variety of occupations here, truck drivers, farmers, carpenters, fishermen, logger. Could happen to anybody. Stay aware, stay safe. We're trying. So far, I haven't been able to get Dave Coles on the line from the Communications, Energy, and Paperworkers Union, but let me tell you something about their situation. They represent a large number of workers in those three sectors, and they also represent workers who are in extraction, not just energy workers in subsequent stages, but also in extraction, including in the bitumen sands up in Alberta. So they have a pretty direct stake in what happens up there, and nonetheless oppose Keystone XL. You can see on their website the specific reasons they give, but you'll find some of those have to do with being a resource extraction economy. A number of countries, typically less developed countries, find their natural resources being taken from them, shipped someplace else, processed, refined, and maybe they get them back later at higher cost, but somebody else makes the money off them. Canada does not want to go that route. There are also effects on the value of the Canadian dollar based on exporting natural resources that make it more difficult to export other things. So the types of jobs that people have may be affected by the form of the economy, by the form of trade, by the form of international transaction that occurs. But it's beyond the short-term type of interest I've just been describing, relatively short-term. There are also longer-term considerations involved. So much like the ATU, as we heard before from President Hanley, CEP also advocates moving to a low-carbon economy, moving to a different structure to our economy that is more sustainable, that's something that can be compatible with an Earth that we can live on and our children and our grandchildren can live on, too. So I urge you, there's a link on the post for this show to the website of the CEP, and I hope you'll go there and check it out and see what they had to say. There's always debates on this sort of issue within labor between those who are seeing the jobs that are at hand in a project and those who are seeing the effects down the road. And there is a need to find ways to transition to an economy that has jobs without having a lot of carbon. As long as the two seem to be linked, we're going to continue to have that conflict, continue to have to fight internally and not be able to have their full strength of the labor movement focused on moving forward as far as the climate is concerned. So one big issue that the CEP very much needs to address and has addressed and brings up is how we make that transition, is how we have jobs and adjustment and consideration for workers as we make the move from the structure that we have now for our economy, from the high carbon, high consumption, high warming economy we have now, to one in the future that would not have those features. And perhaps that's the area where many people who share a passion for both labor justice and environmental justice might have the most to contribute, looking for ways to make the move, to make the transition that that serves both both criteria, that is a way that is compatible with having a fair economy for many people. And that, of course, is not limited to within the borders of North America. There are many, many people throughout the world who are affected by the type of economy we have, by the level of climate change that occurs. And many of the people most affected, of course, are not living in the countries that have had the most to do with changing the climate. So as far as the justice, economic justice, as well as environmental justice of what is done, workers need to be remembered not only here, not only in this continent, but also on other continents. And the effect that climate change has on them is part of the consideration that needs to be made when a policy such as Keystone XL is examined. I'm hoping, as I talk, that we will be able to get President Coe on the line, but I'm thinking that's probably not real likely. So we'll have to make do without that. But again, I urge you to go to their website. It's quite detailed in terms of speeches that have been given, symposia, I should say, various forms in which the CEP has expressed their position. So if you go there and check that out, you will find out more about CEP and climate change. Besides the two unions we've mentioned already, others that have taken a position opposing Keystone XL include the Transit Workers Union, so another union representing people who work in transit, but also National Nurses United, so a different form of seeing the effects of climate change, people who work in healthcare and who see the difference that's made on people's well-being, physical well-being, by the effects of climate change. And that union, the Nurses Union, is centered largely in the Northeast and close to the effects of some of the recent big storms, where it's been very manifest what's new and different and bad. You heard President Hanley refer to a member who had died in the hurricane, and many people obviously were injured and suffered physically as a result of it. So besides those who work in fields where they provide the alternative to things that contribute to climate change, we also have workers who see the effects in their daily work, the bad effects of continuing to go down the path we're on. And as more of that becomes increasingly obvious, it's probably likely we'll see more unions step up and take a position similar to National Nurses United. So those National Nurses United, the Transit Workers Union, Transport Workers Union, I should say, and the Amalgamated Transit Union are three unions in the U.S. that have spoken out against Keystone XL. The Communications, Energy, and Paper Workers Union in Canada, which took quite a bit of heat up north of the border because of it being seen as a issue of national policy. There were conflicts. I mean, the government in power in Canada is very supportive of the Keystone XL, has made it a big deal to push for it south of the border, to have officials from the embassy, from the consulates, various groups go out and speak in favor of the pipeline. So when a Canadian union, and the CEP is Canadian specifically, comes out against it, and when opposition politicians in Canada come out against it, that's a pretty difficult thing for them to do in terms of the heat they take for that stance in the political realm. So in both cases, both in the Canadian union and with the ATU, we're talking about leaders who had to put it on the line to some extent to take these positions, which means that if we want them to continue doing so, there's a need to support that when it happens, to get out there and back up people who take positions that are not the easiest and that are perhaps breaking some ground that should have been broken a long time ago, but it wasn't. So it's time for it to happen now, and time for us to support that in making it happen. Another big opportunity coming up in the near future to express support for this and other key issues of the moment, of course, is May Day. And I'm hoping that people are well aware of May Day plans here in Portland. If you're not, you can find out from one of the many groups sponsoring May Day in Portland. But that's a chance to get out in the streets and support issues that matter in a broad way, not just to one group of workers or not just to people who are working necessarily, but to all of us who are not of the 1%, to all of us who are looking for a world that's a better world, that is possible and should happen for the majority of people now. So put that on your calendar if you haven't yet. Let me once again mention that movie coming up, because I hope that this is something new that KBOO's been starting off. And it's not just a movie, it's a chance to have a discussion, too. So it's more than sitting there and having popcorn. It's a chance to get engaged with an issue and hear some informed discussion about it. So the movie in question is about teachers and defending public education. The title is The Inconvenient Truth About Waiting for Superman. The day is May 9th, Thursday, May 9th at 7 p.m. And it's going to be at the Clinton Street Theater, which is Southeast 26th and Clinton. So that's going to be part of the KBOO movie series. In that case, there will be discussion after it, which will be led by the Portland Social Equality Educators. So if you're interested in education, if you're a teacher, a student, a parent, or just generally interested, that's a chance for you to come out and learn more. Yeah. And I just got a note. We have more music available. If you're tired of my voice, you can hear music. But I do want to mention the fact again that we are coming up on Workers' Memorial Day. It's very easy to forget that people take risks every day or put in risk every day on their jobs. And Workers' Memorial Day is actually when it is because of the anniversary of the foundation of OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. It wasn't until in my lifetime that we had an effort by the government to make sure that people are safe on the job and to try to do something about it if they're not, and to make that a priority. So it's an example of the fact that changes are possible, that progress can be made. It doesn't happen quickly, and obviously as long as anyone dies on the job, it hasn't happened enough. But we want to encourage people to look for those opportunities and to move forward with them. So with that, we're going to wrap it up for Labor Radio for tonight. We'll be back next week, and if you'll stay tuned, you'll hear Prison Pipeline. Right now, some music, and thank you for listening.
Yeah, I start to preach, but anyway, that's what I feel about it. There is power in the union. This is Joe Hill's best song. I'll teach it to you. Would you have freedom from wage slavery? Then come join the grand industrial band. Oh, would you from hunger and... Tell me how this song goes, damn it. I know this song as well as I know my palm of my hand, but... Like I say, get a little fuzzy around the edge. Would you from misery and hunger be free? Come on, do your share, lend a hand. And there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. There is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. That's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Try it out. And there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Oh, would you have mansions of gold in the sky and to live in a shack that's away in the back? Would you have wings up in heaven to fly and starve here with rags on your back? But there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Now, if you like sluggers to beat in your head, don't organize all union despise. If you want nothing before you are dead, shake hands with your boss and look wise. But there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land. One industrial union grand. Then come all ye workers from every land and come join the grand industrial band. 'cause then we our share of this earth shall demand. Come on, do your share, lend a hand. For there is power in a band of working folk when we stand hand in hand. And that's a power that must rule in every land, one industrial union grand. Power and union.
Spit blood. Have you been in the mine when the fire damp blew, shipped as a hand with a freighter's crew, or worked in a levee flood? Have you rotted wet in a grading camp or scorched in a desert line? Have you done your night stint with your lamp, watching the timbers drip with damp, or heard the oil rig whine? Have you had your pay held back for tools you never saw or could use? Have you gone like a fool with the other fools to the boss's saloon where the strong arm rules, and cashed your time for booze? I do no kicking at God or fate. I keep my shoes for the road, the long gray road, and I love it, mate. Hayfoot, strawfoot, that's my gate, and I carry no other man's load. I don't mind working to earn my bread, and I just as soon keep straight. But just like the preacher man said, I'm a ram and I've missed the gate. But I'm jogging along, jogging ahead. Perhaps I'll find it, mate. It's up the ramp to the lumber camp with a sick and aching head. I blowed another winter's stake and I got the gyms instead. It seems I'll never learn the truth that's written plain as day. The more they try to welcome you, the more they make it pay. Hit blankets, defend jungle hound, and pitch him out the
door.
You're
listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio. We just heard another wonderful episode of Labor Radio, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from American Federation of State, County and Municipal Employees Oregon Council 75, representing over 25,000 Oregon public and private sector employees, families, and communities, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members since 1942. More information at www.oregonafsme.com. That online information again is www.oregonafsme.com. This program has also been made possible in part by the KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information at ubc156.org. Again, that information online is ubc156.org. And please stay tuned next for Prison Pipeline.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hello, and welcome to Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Today is Earth Day, 4/22/2013, and in honor of that, we will be joined by Will Potter tonight by phone from Washington, D.C. Will is an award-winning independent journalist and author of Green is the New Red, an insider's account of a social movement under siege. His book and website at greenisthenewred.com is about how animal rights and environmental activists are being targeted as eco-terrorists and what that means to our freedom and security. He will be speaking with us about that movement and how it is impacted by the justice system in these United States. Will, could you take a second to introduce yourself for us and the audience?
Sure. Like you said, I'm a reporter based in Washington, D.C., and I focus on civil liberties issues post 9/11. And I have a special area of focus on how terrorism rhetoric and legislation is being used against social movements, especially the animal rights and environmental movements, who have been labeled the number one domestic terrorism threat